Мне предложено очень такая, по-моему, интересная тема.
Topic,
и я бы сказал, необычная.
And I should admit that it is unusual. And a very well put one. So your thoughts result in your deeds. I should admit, I haven't come across such a well put topic, and I am glad to discuss it here with you. My main task is not to tell you something unusual or something unknown, but my main task is for us to be able to exchange thoughts and to try to discuss the questions which maybe you have or which will appear in the process of our communication. And I think that this topic that we have here makes us think about interesting things. First of all, we say your thoughts result in your deeds. But where do the thoughts come from? There was a very famous philosopher on the edge of 19th and 20th century, the French philosopher Bergson, who claimed that our brain is just a phone station. It doesn't generate thoughts, but it is just a phone station for transmitting thoughts. And here we have a question: and what generates thoughts? What is the source of the thoughts? Because indeed, we are often amazed at some philosophers who speak such a thought or idea that surprises everyone. Where did this thought come from? So I should say that a person is a very diversified and deep world, the nature of which is up to the present day is very little known in the ocean of unknown. We often hear that we know a person so well, but we don't know the psyche and the soul, we don't know the nature of the human thought and of the human heart. And as this question of where the thoughts come from is often interpreted as if these thoughts come from our head or from our intellect, I would like to point out that not everyone by far agrees with this idea. In one of the ancient books, which is already 2,000 years old, there is such a phrase: the thoughts of a person come out from heart. So it's amazing, they don't come out from the mind, but from a heart. Sometimes we notice that when we are excited, we speak and speak, we express our emotions, we speak a lot, and it's clear that we speak not because that's the way we think, but then we say, I shouldn't have said that, it's so unreasonable, but these thoughts of ours and these words of ours came out from our heart. Sometimes they are good and pleasant, and sometimes they are such that cause remorse when it's late. So where does this famous phrase come from, that thoughts come from a heart? I will continue it. What are these thoughts? It says there that both love and hatred, both evil and friendship, peace and war, indignation and irritation, and vice versa, mercifulness and compassion, everything comes out from there because our heart is the source of our thoughts. Our brain is a phone station indeed, which can only transmit something as a filter and save something. I'd like to say something, but my mind doesn't allow this because I can offend someone and I didn't say it. So thoughts of a person come out from their heart. This phrase is very meaningful because it turns out that the main content of a person is this organ. When I speak of heart, I don't mean the blood pump as an organ. I mean the organ of feeling, of experience. That's what we love with and hope with and suffer with, or vice versa, which we can hate with. So when we speak of this side of the human nature, then taking into account the modern situation, we should pay attention to one of the sides of this life of ours. In particular, I'd like to attract your attention to the informational side of the modern world, especially to the computer information which we receive via means of technological and informational kind. So we hear amazing and strange and even scary things. It turns out that the computer games which the internet is full of, and even the computer films and movies which contain many ideas, it turns out that all of this can rip up a soul, not to open a soul as we open it to our friend, no, but to disclose or rip up like a burglar who breaks in or opens something that is forbidden. So the computer games rip up human souls, they interfere with the human conscience as a burglar. And unfortunately, we don't hear much about it nowadays. If only we knew how many problems a person has as the result of this ripping up of our conscience, I think that many people would beware of watching this series full of murders, sufferings, violence, sadism, and everything of the kind. I think we would beware. And if we took into account the following point, of which at long last the modern science has spoken, that it turns out if we take into account that our human psyche has a certain tune, so our organism, soul, is tuned physically, which is called alpha tune of the kind. So these are particular fluctuations which every human body eliminates, and it turns out that if suddenly what we see on TV or on the internet, if any movie or information or games have the same frequency of fluctuations as a person has, then happens resonance. It's a term from physics, and this resonance can be disastrous for the human psyche. You all remember and know how first was the resonance effect discovered, when a group of military men walked on the bridge and it started to swing so much that the bridge collapsed. And not so long ago in Japan, after one movie, 900, over 900 children were hospitalized with the psychological disorders. And this was investigated, and it turned out that these fluctuations were imposed one onto another, so those fluctuations eliminated by the TV and the fluctuations of the human body, and children are weak yet. And they turned out to be under the effect that they couldn't resist. So over 900 children, and of course it was investigated at once and it was banned, and these movies and information with these fluctuations rates are forbidden now. Now it is already possible to generate these fluctuations in such a way that by means of these technologies, aggressive reaction can be caused in people aimed at anyone or anything. A person can be zombified by means of these newest technologies. Such a weapon has been discovered that has never existed in the history of the mankind. Of course, some people could be hypnotized, but it's not the case. Now there are technical means that can be used for some particular purposes. So these new technologies that we are using now, they don't just have the benefits only, like information, but also they also have danger in them, and it's very important for a person to know about it. Thoughts of a person are indeed the source of the human deeds. Of course, it is obvious. Everything we do is nothing but the embodiment of our thought. Everything that is done, so the places where we are sitting, where we are standing, everything that has been built, all the technologies, all the creations are the embodiments of our human thoughts. Someone made this table and someone else made a different table. There are different kinds of architectures. What is this? This has been created by people as the embodiment of their thoughts. Where do they originate from? As we started, they originate from a human heart. And now I will open you the secret. What old book I was referring to, it is the Gospel of Jesus Christ. It turns out that he says that depending on the state of our heart, and again, not a blood pump, but heart as an organ of feeling, so depending on it, we have different corresponding thoughts. So the state of a heart defines thoughts. And that's the main question of life. In Gospel we read, "Blessed are the pure in heart, for they shall see God." So people are blessed who have pure heart. So we speak a lot about the mind, knowledge, information, culture, don't we? And who speaks of the heart? We so seldom hear it, and it is the source of the human life. It turns out that if a person acquires a pure heart, it turns out, then Christ says, blessed are the pure in heart, for they shall see God. What does it mean, they shall see God? It doesn't mean that they will physically see Him, because God is not an object. It means that they will see something that in Christian terms is called the primary beauty, love itself. That's who God is. Who wouldn't like to see all that? When we see a beautiful painting, we tell everyone around, just come here, take a look, we're so happy, and want everyone else to see, because beauty in itself grasps a person's soul and gives them pleasure, let alone love, of course. When we touch love itself, and with someone who actually loves, and not just nice words, but really loves, and Christianity says that God is love, and what kind of love is He? This love has been demonstrated and proved by the cross where Jesus Christ was crucified for the people. That's where the sense of life is. That's where the dignity and the greatness of the human personality is. Where is it? It is in love. And Gospel says that the main beauty and dignity of a person is reaching of this love. It's not about romanticism. Romanticism, you know, is not worth much, because they can love each other today and get divorced tomorrow because they hate each other. That's the love. So it's not for nothing that one of the philosophers called this romantic love selfishness in disguise. I love another person for as long as they give me pleasure. If they touch me, I don't love them anymore. So what kind of a love is it? It's love of a cat who likes you for as long as you play with it, but at any next moment a cat can bite you. So Christianity speaks of love that once a person acquires, they love everything and everyone. Why? There is a good example: as the sun shines for all, not just for the righteous people or for good people, no, but for the sinful people and for good and for evil. So it turns out that love is for everyone and for everything. So God is the love that shines for all. And why do we suffer most of all? Because of the lack of love. I don't have love inside myself, and I don't see love in anyone else. Or maybe it's just social niceties, but not real love. So where is love? And suddenly we hear such a phrase, blessed are the pure in heart, for they shall see God, who is love. So we hear about the purity of heart, of the heart from where, as we have mentioned, our thoughts come from. Consequently, all the deeds come from the heart. What is purity of the heart the Christianity speaks of? It's a very simple and complicated thing at the same time. It is very simple for understanding and very difficult for acquiring and achieving. What is love? For example, I see someone did something bad, someone that I know. I can start gossiping. Or I can not mention it to a single person. Why should I speak of it? Would I like all my bad actions to be told of? I don't think so. And we hear one of the first commandments: whatever you want men to do to you, do also to them. So the purity of heart is not passing judgment on other people, not gossiping, but to sympathize with them even when they are doing something not good, maybe even to pray for this person, and not trying to turn them into dirt, as we often do. And when I humiliate someone, when I judge someone, what am I doing? I am showing myself who I am and how much dirt I have in my heart. Instead of demonstrating the generosity of spirit towards a person, I start speaking of all the dirty things, start passing judgments, and it doesn't even cross my mind that's the kind of person who I am. Would a mother who loves her child discuss some problems or bad things of her child? No, she will hide this or even try to justify it. You see, she would protect a child. Why? Because she loves her child. So blessed are the pure in heart. A pure heart won't humiliate another person, won't pass judgment. Because what does it mean? It means that just look how much I am better than they are. I would never do such a thing. So that's how much better I am. Can you imagine? He is a liar. And I am? Who am I? You'd better stop speaking. So don't I ever lie? So am I that good? So you see, that's the pride when I pass judgments on other people. And that's the same for everything. The purity of heart is love to another person. What kind of love? At least the beginning of love. Don't pass judgment. Be generous. Don't wish bad things to happen to them. Don't envy. That's the beginning of love. So act fairly. That's the beginning of love. That's the beginning of the pure heart. How can one acquire that? How? A person who doesn't fight their bad thoughts will never acquire a pure heart. It turns out that we are coming up to the fact that the spiritual life is, first of all, the fighting of the bad thoughts. We know what our bad thoughts are. We often pass such judgments on other people. Then later we are ashamed and we tell other people, please don't tell anyone, because we are ashamed. The spiritual life of a person is happening in a person's heart. And the first and foremost that everyone should know in order to acquire this purity of heart, that fighting all the bad, evil thoughts is essential. A thought is a great power. It's not for nothing. People say, like in yoga, that an elephant can be killed with a thought. I don't think it ever happened, but the idea is that a thought is a great power. A person can be killed with a thought. There are many facts. Suddenly, a person in a normal state is told of a terrible catastrophe that happened to his or her family, and often it ends in a heartbreak, meaning in a heart stroke. Sometimes a person can be basically resurrected with a thought. For instance, someone is in despair, and we sympathize with them to such an extent, or even we help them so much that a person really, like resurrects, comes back from this despair. So a word is an embodied thought, and with the help of a word and of a thought, a person can be both killed and returned back to life. So these are the two extremes. But we don't have to kill or return from the dead, but we can also wound a person with a word, and a person suffers so much. So in this regard, I'd like to point out that it turns out that every act of our mind, every act of our thought and word, evil or good, good or bad, first of all, we, with this act, first of all, either bring benefit or do harm to ourselves. We should remember that a human thought, first of all, has impact on a person themselves, and next it has impact on someone else. When I insult someone, so I wounded myself with a knife, and it's essential for understanding, because we all wish for the best for ourselves. Would we like to cut ourselves? No. And we forget. Then when it comes to our body, oh yes, we understand it perfectly well. But when it comes to our soul, we don't understand anything. What happened? Where is our mind and reason? Every our bad word, and the more so with an evil word, a word of hatred, is a knife that we pierce ourselves with. Let's take a look at hatred. I hate someone, but they know nothing about it. They are happy and well and everything. And what about me? And I'm evil and I hate someone and I suffer because of it, because it's inside of me. So who do I do harm to? It's so important to understand. And Gospel tells us of such things. It says that blessed are the pure in heart, because a heart is a valuable crystal vessel, and it's so beautiful and it's so dangerous to hit it. It is terrible when it's broken to pieces. It's disgusting when it's filled with dirt. That's what Christianity says. One should try as hard as they can to fill it with generosity of spirit, benevolence, compassion, love. It's not that easy, but all of it starts with a thought. A thought is a source of all the human activity, and one should pay a lot of attention to it. If we turn to the writings of those people who the Orthodox Church calls saints, then we'll see that they pay the fullest attention to the state of heart. If you wish to be happy, you shouldn't hurt yourself. You shouldn't smudge yourself with dirt, because not a single thought passes, you know, parallel to your mind, because it is your thought and you're filling your heart with this. And the Holy Fathers paid a lot of attention to this, and they told us about how we should fight against bad thoughts by means of turning to God and saying, "O Lord, forgive me for passing judgments on other people. I'm sorry. I hated someone once more. I'm sorry. I have proud thoughts again, because I'm really sorry for this stupidity, for this vanity." That's where the vector of our life is. And on this way, indeed, it is possible to keep this valuable vessel clean and pure, and not to allow to break it into pieces. And in our heart, our happiness is, and our greatest unhappiness is also in our heart. Yes, this is of a great importance. It's not for nothing that Dostoevsky said that the best people can be recognized in their moral development, in the best moral development, and by the best moral influence. Of course, when a person has a pure vessel inside them, they have a great impact on other people who they come across in their life, and this is the greatest good. And can I mention one more thing? Okay. I'd like to pay attention to one more thing, and I'll stop talking. You shouldn't allow the professors to have the freedom of speech, because you won't be able to stop them. So I'd like to point out one more thing. You should take into account, either we want to believe or not, but we shouldn't think that there are people, flea, elephants, monkeys, and crocodiles, and that's it. And why don't we take into account the spirits of good and evil? All the humanity has been mentioning it in the course of the history, a great number of experiences when people saw, felt, touched them, and we are trying to negate this. Why? They do exist, and it turns out there is a law. There's an amazing and important law that everyone should know about. It turns out that with any evil wish of ours, with our evil action, I get united with the evil spirits. As they say that similar things get united and similar spirits get united. And that's why when we follow the way of evil, that means we naturally attract the evil spirits. And one shouldn't wait for anything good from the evil spirits. That's why it's very dangerous to allow these bad desires, thoughts, disgusting thoughts, as the water can easily get mixed with water. The same thing happens in spirit, because an evil spirit attracts an evil spirit, and here the resonance law comes again, because these thoughts acquire more and more power in my soul every time. And who suffers from that? I do. So who suffers from all the bad things inside my soul? I do. Who is my first enemy? I am my own first enemy. How terrible it is. I'm always looking around myself. Who did something bad to me? Who said something wrong? Who is not right today? But it turns out that I am my first enemy, because I think these bad thoughts. So it's very important to understand this. And I would like to try to answer one very important question of our troubles, sorrows, problems, sufferings, which, as it seems to me, we are not guilty of. We were born in this way, or something happened, we suffered a car crash, or we are sick. How did God allow this? Why did He allow this? If His love and such things are happening to me, you see, other people are absolutely healthy, and I'm not even half as healthy as they are. So we forget one simple thing. The first and foremost, when we say God, we should understand God means that I believe that it turns out my earthly life is a flash, which has a very short term, but my real life is eternal, and not just this lapse of time. And let's think, if we set such an example, aliens are looking down to Earth, and they see two adults who are making a child go to some building where there is a man dressed in white, sits this child who is being held, open child's mouth, and the aliens would say, wow, these are some bandits. Or when a person is being undressed, put on the table and being cut, oh, that's sadism, isn't it? How can aliens realize that there are different diseases and there are different treatments for different diseases? So when I have a toothache, I have to go to a dentist with appendix. Well, I have to be operated and I have to be cut. Otherwise, I will die. It turns out that love is not just saying nice things. Love is looking for the use. So, to what would be useful for a person? Meaning that a person should change inside and with dignity enter the eternal life. You know, once I was traveling by plane with a member of a Russian Olympic team, and he told me how much time they had to train and how hard it was. It was terrible. And what were they doing it for? Just perhaps they would win some Olympic medal. And that's it. And then everything the same awaits for all people. Even the greatest sportsmen of ancient Greece are already in their afterlife. You see, we shouldn't forget a simple thing said by one ancient man. Who can I call reasonable? Only a person who remembers that there is an end to this earthly life of theirs. So this life is just the training for us, and we all have to go through different trainings. Some are sick and some are healthy, someone is rich and someone is poor, someone is talented and someone is not, and all of them will go where they will all go there, because the sense of life is not in this life, but the sense of this earthly life is for a person to demonstrate themselves as a personality, what they freely aim at and what they want. A poor person just wants only this life and nothing more, like an animal. So don't you have mind and reason? If there is God, it means that my final destination is not just a moment of this earthly life, but my final destination is the blessed, eternal, true life. And from this standpoint, it becomes clear that for every particular person who has some particular genes, some particular lifestyle, there's a different chance to show what I aim at, what I want, what I choose. So we need to travel by bus. Some have nice seats in this bus, someone has to stand, but those who have to stand start complaining, why didn't I get a nice seat? So shouldn't you be happy that you can drive to the place where you need? Because both those who are sitting in the seats and those who are standing, very soon we will all arrive and get out of this bus. So, after all, we should realize it. That's why the Christian faith gives hope to a person even when they find themselves in the most terrible life situations, because we know that our life is just a sparkle that flew out from a fire and it will burn out. If there is no God, it's terrible. If there is God and there is eternal life, then oh my God, you know better what is more important for me and what is more useful for me for life and not for death. And that's why the greatest holiday of the Orthodox Church is Easter, because Christ was the first person who resurrected, and Christianity promises the general resurrection in the fullness of dignity and human beauty. That's what a person is aimed for, and blessed is a person who believes in it. Thank you. The first question, when I come here to the social service, I often hear this question from people who are here. They often ask, of course I believe in God, I realize that the world is created by Him, I'm not an evil person, I try not to harm people much. I don't understand why I need to confess. Why do I need to take communion? Isn't it enough for me to believe in God in my soul? Okay, thank you. I will tell you, I'm a very nice person. I hope you don't doubt this. But can you imagine, what do I notice? I have to wash my face every day, to take a shower, to change the lining. Why do I need to do this? To clean up my room. So, about when it comes to our physical life, we realize that we will become as dirty as it gets, and nobody will want to communicate with me. We need to clean the apartment. So confession is the means to wash the dirt from myself. Lord, I'm sorry, I did this or that again, or I thought this or that again. So a sin is dirt, and we smudge ourselves all the time. And should we stay dirty as piglets? You know, pigs love the dirt, so should we be like them? We should wash ourselves. So that's what we need confession for. That's what the sacraments are for. So both confession and communion are for this, because unfortunately we sin all the time. We jump from one dirty puddle into the other dirty puddle. I envied, or I gossiped, or I said something bad about people, and so on and so forth. So there's a pile of dirt, and after that, shouldn't I wash myself? So there are sacraments which clean us, but only on the condition if we accept the sacraments with a sincere remorse. Because it's not the main thing that we should go to the confession and name our sins or take communion. No, only on the condition of the sincere remorse, and we need to make ourselves change in the future. Only in that case the sacraments wash the dirt off a person. And when a person accepts this sacrament sincerely, they feel what good it is. A general question: how can one get saved at our times? Today, one can get saved in the following way. First, if it's a believer, of course, that's the way I understood the question. First of all, We should accept the life conditions and circumstances of our life, not just as the circumstances that I deserve, but also with gratitude. That's the way the bandit to the right of Jesus Christ got saved. He was a bandit, but he said, I get what I deserve. And he said it when he was hanging on the cross, crucified, when it's hard to inhale. And that's what he said. And for this, he was answered, you will be in paradise with me today. So a person who wants to get saved should carry this life with tolerance, patience, and, if it's possible, even with a gratitude to God. Because if we look inside ourselves, in our hearts, we will realize that we are not even worse of this, and we live in such a way. We have lots of things, so I don't even deserve many of the things I have. So those people who want to get saved today should have this way of thinking. Thank you, Lord, for all I have. Because Christ said that we should acquire our souls with patience. That's the way of salvation.